Hello, friends. Welcome to season 5 of the Tax Chick podcast. I feel like I need those air horns or something to announce the celebration of this season. I cannot believe that we are in season 5 and doing a big launch today with a bunch of episodes all at once. But I'm starting off with a guest episode, and this is pretty cool. It's a guest episode with a fellow Saskatoon podcaster who happens to also be podcasting on finance, tax, money issues, which is really cool. So today, my guest is Evan Neufeld. And Evan is a certified financial planner in the city, and he specializes in retirement planning and investment advice for Canadians over 45. But he is also the host of the Canadian Money Roadmap, which is an awesome podcast. I highly encourage you to listen to it. They're nice short episodes released regularly, and Evan is really passionate, much like myself, about providing foundational information to the public about what they need to know on certain topics. And so I think you'll find his podcast to be very, very good. It was such a pleasure recording with him, as it always is when recording with fellow podcasters. They've got a great mic. It's just an easy setup, and we have always great conversations. I have never had the chance to meet Evan in person yet, and we were talking about that while on our recording today, and said, you know, we really need to like go for lunch. Our offices aren't that far apart. So stay tuned for a meeting of podcasters in the wild. I'll try to update you guys. But anyway, Evan's talking today with me about TFSAs. And we chose this topic because we both get a lot of questions about this type of investment vehicle. I find that no matter how much I write about it and podcast about it, I still get a lot of questions. And there's a lot of miscommunication around what it is, how it's taxed, and in particular, what happens when you die and what options are available for planning involving the TFSA prior to your death. And so we're tackling all of those topics today. We're talking about what can go in a TFSA, what happens if you contribute too much, what happens when you pull stuff out, and also what happens when you receive a TFSA as either a beneficiary or something called a successor holder, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So I'm really excited to kind of get into the episode with you. I will give you some updates on what's been happening in my life over the last couple of months in one of my mini episodes, so check those out. But for now, without further ado, I'm going to head to this wonderful conversation with my new friend, Evan Neufeld. Well, Evan, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's great to have a fellow podcaster in the house.
And a fellow Saskatoonian too, right? We're keeping it local here. Yeah.
I guess thanks we for could be in the same room together if we really wanted to be, but you know, we just had a huge dump of snow, so we're each in our own locations with our pretty podcast mics and doing this a bit remotely. Someday we'll be in the same room together,
I'm sure. Yeah, but for now this works great. Technology is wonderful.
Well, I'm really glad you popped on today. We decided we wanted to have a bit of a chat about TFSAs. I think it's a comment and a question that a lot of my clients have. Even though I'm a lawyer, I get asked about them a lot. And I know it's certainly an area that you have some expertise in. And so we thought we'd do kind of TFSA 101 today on this podcast. And so I propose we like dive right in. Are you cool with diving right in?
Yeah, set me up. Where do you want to start?
Well, how about we go back to foundations? How about we go back to what is a TFSA?
Sure. TFSA, I like to spell it out because lots of people actually say TSFA. And so if you just say it, you'll figure out the acronym. It's tax-free savings account. And it is just a plan type. So it's a registered plan type. It's not an investment in and of itself. And my frustration that I've had in terms of financial literacy is that the banks largely have latched onto the TFSA, especially when it first launched back in 2009. They latched onto it because it has that SA in there, that savings account. And the banks are like, we do that. We do this savings account thing. And so when you went to the bank and, you know, the mid-2000s there and you opened up a TFSA, they said, okay, we'll put you in a high interest TFSA. And that's what everybody thought it was at the beginning. No, that's not what it is. First and foremost, a TFSA is just a plan type. And then the investment component sits within your plan type. So I explain it one step simpler. It's a bucket, and you can put stuff in your bucket, and it just comes with different tax privileges along the way.
I like the buckets. I'm always using buckets when I'm talking to clients. And I mean, I guess when we think about a plan type, if you're listening to this, I mean, it's a TFSA is one plan type, an RRSP is a plan type, a mutual fund is like a plan type. It is a thing that you can use as an investment vehicle. It just has a fancy name. I always think TFSA, it always makes me think of like flying. And whatever that other acronym
TSA,
is.
TSA, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Transportation Security Administration, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. That kind of goes through my head when I hear TFSA. Okay, so yeah. We've got the basics on TFSA. How about we talk about limits to what you're allowed to put into a TFSA? Because as you've identified, this is not a savings account. This is not a you can do whatever you want with it and put in and take out and have a fun time to your max. There are certain rules and guidelines and limitations. Can you speak a bit to that?
Yeah, so you can't just put in however much you want, like a traditional savings account or a bank account would be, because it is a registered plan type. There's always rules that's kind of sit around these plans, like an RSP, like you mentioned before as well. So a TFSA, you gain room based on your age. So when you turn to 18 is when you start getting room. The challenge there is that it launched in 2009, and I suspect many of you listening were at least 18 in 2009, and so you have the lifetime maximum available to you. So every year that has passed since it launched, you get the contribution room for that year, and it just carries forward. It's not a situation where if you don't use it, you lose it. You can accumulate it over time and then use it all at once or never or in lumps, however you feel or however it works with your financial plan. But on an ongoing basis, so every calendar year that rolls over, every January, you'll get the new room that everyone 18 and older gets for that year. So easy example, if you turn 18 here in 2024, you get $7,000 of room. That's the current annual maximum. Let's back up one more year just to kind of do the math. If you turned 18 in 2023, the new room in 2023 was actually $6,500. And so if you were turned 18 in 2023, you have $6,500 for last year, $7,000 for this year. You're testing me on the math. It's $13,500. So you can do $13,500. And you can kind of go backwards that way. I'll do the extra math for you. So if you were at least 18 in 2009, so if you're born in 1991 or later, you will have the lifetime maximum of $95,000, because the amounts have changed so many times, because it started at $5,000 and then it gets indexed to inflation, rounded to the nearest 500. And there was one year in 2015 where they did a random $10,000 year. A certain government was trying to get reelected, believe it or not. And so crazy things happen. So it's tough to calculate your TFSA contribution room. But if all of those numbers and math didn't really check the box with you, you can log on to your CRA My Account and they'll put a reasonably recent estimate of how much you can put on there. It can be a little bit complicated. So I say trust the CRA number loosely because your financial institution doesn't have to report your contributions until the end of March for the previous year. And so it won't, if you look in January, it won't know anything from the previous year or anything in the current year. It can get
pretty complicated. That is a very good point. And I think that actually segues really nicely into the next point we were going to talk about, which is what happens if you over-contribute? So what happens if you rely on the wrong number or you don't know what number you're looking for and you contribute too much?
Perfect. This is, it's relatively straightforward. It is just a penalty. You get a 1% per month penalty on any dollars over your contribution limit. So say you put in, you've got the lifetime maximum of $95,000 and hooray, you won the lottery. You got $100,000 sitting in your bank account and you put $100,000 in on day one. Oops, you over-contributed by $5,000. And so you would have a $50 penalty every month that you have the over-contribution. So the way that gets solved is either through absorbing your previous over-contribution with new contribution room when the calendar year rolls over, That's one way. Another way is responding to the nasty letter that you'll get from CRA and withdrawing it immediately. I'd highly recommend that approach.
Yes.
So those are the main things. So it's a penalty, but it can be solved. CRA doesn't really have a strong track record of enforcing this on the first mm-hmm. offense. And so they usually say, hey, you messed up. This was honest mistake, right? Just take the money out and go forth and sin no more kind of situation.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's interesting because you'd assume that they would get a little nastier with it. But I've seen those letters and it's true. As long as you pull it out, we all just go back to life as is and you pay the penalty for whatever period of time that you were over. But there's no special elections that need to be filed. You don't have to really seek discretion or permission for things. It's just, no, they've asked you to please remove it, then remove it. And we all move on. So it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, a few times I've seen it where like we've caught an accidental overcontribution before a communication has been received from CRA. Mm. And in some cases, I've seen them waive the penalty entirely because right. like, oh, you actually caught it and removed it quite quickly. And so they're pretty reasonable. CRA is not known for being the most reasonable tax authority in the world. But with TFSAs, if you do an honest mistake the first time, it's okay. But yeah, just be aware that you probably don't want to test them too much on it.
Yes, don't become a repeat offender. That's never a good thing with CRA, for yeah. sure.
A frequent flyer, to use our flying analogy from before. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, now that we're starting to talk a bit about CRA, I think this leads us to the next point, which is, you know, why do we care about TFSAs? Well, we care about them because they're fairly tax efficient. So let's talk about how are TFSAs taxed.
Perfect. In the grand scheme of things, the main benefit of the TFSA is that when you invest in the plan, all of the growth that happens in there is yours to keep, and you don't pay a dime of tax on it. Maybe I'll caveat this later with the odd instance where that might actually come into play. But for the vast majority of us that would use a TFSA for pretty benign investment strategies, you will not see a dime of tax on your investment growth. So when you put your money in, the reason I don't like it as a savings account, like we were talking about before, is that, okay, let's go back to the general principle of tax. If you would agree with me on this, you're the tax expert here, but the general philosophy is if you make money, you pay tax. And
yes.
and then there's caveats from there or exceptions. Correct. Or whatever. TFSA is one of those exceptions, where if you make money, you don't actually have to pay tax. So with some investment accounts, say with capital gains in a non-registered account, you pay tax when you incur the capital gain or when you have the income. So when you receive a dividend, you pay tax. In a TFSA, if you receive a dividend, you don't pay tax. If you receive interest from GICs or bonds, or if you have it in a high interest savings account, you don't pay any tax on that. But the rate of growth on interest is typically quite low. So the benefit of a TFSA is typically seen for long-term investing. This comes along with risk. Here's my caveat here. You're the lawyer. I'm a financial planner. We got to caveat this. Investing is not a universal truth, or it shouldn't be recommended for everybody. But if that matches your financial plan for a long term and you happen to make more money in your TFSA by investing, you get to keep all of the growth. Typically, the government shares it. If it's in an RSP, you mm-hmm. share that with them. If it's a non-registered account, you share it with them. TFSA, you keep it for yourself.
Perfect. And I think that is one of the big perks. You're correct, though. The gains are not as great and the money you're making is not as great. That's how they kind of get you. But you can still have this growth that, for the most part, accrues on a tax-deferred basis. So what happens then? You've been growing your TFSA and you say, I need to take money out of my TFSA. Then what happens?
Same thing. So there's no instance where you have to get a tax slip. So I'll contrast this with an RSP, which is quite common. You can always take money out of your RSP, even if you're not retired. I know it's in the name, but you can take money out of your RSP. You just get a T4 RSP slip for it. Yeah. With the TFSA, there's no slips. So it's very, very simple. So say you're invested in, say, like an index fund or a mutual fund, or you can sell it. It still stays in your TFSA. But then when you withdraw that money from your TFSA to your bank account, you don't pay any taxes on that either. So this is, if I could kind of take this one step further as far as the contribution room goes, any dollars that you take out of your TFSA can be recontributed back into your TFSA. Here's the big one. When the next calendar year rolls over. So you have to wait until the next calendar year for you to get that room back. So you don't get the original contribution room. You actually get the high watermark of whatever you withdrew. I'm going to assume it's a high watermark. I assume people make money. It's not always true, though. I guess the opposite is true then, right? So if you had something that was worth $20,000, declined in value to $10,000, and you took out $10,000, you can only put back in $10,000. You can't put in the original $20,000. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because I feel like that's where I see people get tripped up. They're going about their year and they need to pull out some funds because they're going to buy a car or they're going to invest in something. And so they pull the funds out and then they do whatever they're doing, and then they come upon another windfall and they go, great, I'm just going to throw it back in. And then that's when we end up in the over-contribution scenario because they haven't waited till that next calendar year. And I mean, part of that all comes back into this weird timing thing that we were talking about, where it's not always as easy. You've kind of got to run that calendar year cycle in order to get your room increased again. Now, keep in mind, if you're somebody who has not maxed out your full contribution room and you take some out, you can probably put it back in as long as you had enough contribution room to begin with. So it's just, if you're in that scenario where you fully maxed out your contribution room, you take something out, you cannot put it back in until such time as you've garnered new room in that new calendar year. So if you're doing this in and out, it's something that you're going to want to do in conjunction with advice or review by hopefully your financial advisor or whoever you're working with to do those investments, because otherwise you could end up receiving one of those letters from CRA that we all like to avoid receiving if we can.
Yeah, the most common instance of overcontribution doesn't usually come from people just dumping in huge volumes of money. It's usually from the in and outs, right? So it's, you put 50 in, you take 50 out. Oops, I didn't actually need the 50. I'll just pop it back in there. Nope, now you've overcontributed, right? And so that can happen. But to your earlier point, you know, if you have 95,000 of room, you put 10 in and then you take 10 out and then you put 10 back in. Well, now you've technically used 20,000 of room, which you haven't overcontributed. You've just used new room twice. If that makes sense.
I feel like I'm singing the Hokey Pokey in my head as
you
you're
saying. You put the 10 in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that's something what you guys there. Can all, you can all, you'll hear that in your head now when you're taking your stuff in and out of your TFSA. So when you talk a bit about some of these investments or like permitted investments within a TFSA, I think sometimes there's a bit of a confusion over the language that's used, you know, registered investments versus non-registered investments versus a mutual fund versus an RSP. Like, we use all these terms, and I feel like sometimes as a layperson, it's hard to understand the difference between the terms. Can you talk a bit about what some of the permitted investments are within a TFSA?
Sure. So I'll kind of try to use my bucket analogy again, and then the things that go in the bucket. Back to the TFSA is a bucket, RSP is a bucket, a mutual fund is not a bucket, a mutual fund is something that can go in your bucket. So the plan types can accept things like mutual funds and ETFs. Your listeners might have heard of ETFs before, maybe not. An ETF is functionally a mutual fund, they're just different. So both a mutual fund and an ETF, they're pools of stocks, bonds, cash, things like that. If you want to invest in the stock market, it is dreadfully expensive. If you look at a single share of a company, it might be many hundreds of dollars, and perhaps in US currency, things like that. So for the average investor to actually build a diversified portfolio, it's very expensive. It's very difficult. The actual logistics of doing it are challenging. And so that's why mutual funds and ETFs exist, because they're just pools of stocks and bonds that you can buy with smaller dollars. And it just makes it a lot more simple to build a diversified portfolio. So as far as permitted investments in a TFSA goes, you can have the building blocks of mutual funds. So you could have stocks, bonds, cash, GICs, same thing with RSPs, the same rules apply. Or you could have them in bundled form, in the form of mutual funds and ETFs. Those are very, very common. You can't own your primary residence or like rental properties inside of a TFSA or an RSP, these the permitted investment types are usually reserved for like public securities. That would be the most common. Online, there is reference to certain instances of having small business shares in there. I've never seen the instance where that's actually applicable, to be honest. And so that might be buried further in the Income Tax Act than I'm familiar with. But that, largely speaking, public securities are the main things. Yeah,
I agree. I've heard rumors of that as well. I've never seen it in practice. And it just seems like an odd thing to do in that particular instance. Well, the other thing that I know we have some questions about every now and then is that, you know, somebody will start investing and they'll buy a bunch of RRSPs. And then, you know, you hear, oh, well, let's move your RRSP over to TFSA. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how the stuff gets in the bucket, because I think our natural reaction is, oh, we just take cash and we deposit it in the bucket. But are there other things, other ways we can get stuff in that bucket?
I would say yes, but not without cost. So if you have money in an RSP already, well, this is an RSP podcast, so I won't get into the mechanics there necessarily, but every dollar that ever comes out of an RSP comes with a tax bill. And it's taxable at your marginal rate. And so I assume that most people listening know what marginal tax rate is. Mm-hmm. So it comes out at your marginal rate. And so there could be an instance where you might be in a lower than usual marginal tax rate where that could make sense, or you could take some money out. There's the idea of doing what's called an in-kind transfer, where you transfer an investment directly that you own. It's like, cool, now you just have it in your TFSA, but the tax bill still comes. So like, there's no tax advantage to doing it. Same thing with a non-registered account. So you could have an investment in one of these registered buckets of TFSA, RSP, even things like a LIRA. If you have old pension money, there's many other plan types. You cannot transfer them with a tax advantage into your TFSA. So there's a tax bill that comes in the middle. Because when you invest in a TFSA, the tax bill shows up at the front end. Mm-hmm. You earn your income, you pay your taxes, and now you invest after tax dollars into your TFSA. Mm-hmm. With an RSP, the theory is that you're investing pre-tax dollars. So the government's got to get there some way. They're not going to give you too many advantages here. So to get money into your TFSA, out of cash is a great one. You can do it from investments that you already have, but it's say if it's a non-registered account and you do a direct transfer, you're still going to get the capital gains tax bill on its way in. Yep.
So if anyone was listening to this and thinking, wow, TFSAs are amazing, I can do anything I want and not get taxed, sorry to burst your bubble. We were just getting to it. It just took us some time. There are really wonderful things about this vehicle, but I think, as you've indicated, anytime you're doing a transaction that involves some sort of financial component and you're buying and selling something or you're investing in something, you have to take that step and think, okay, what am I doing? And is there a tax consequence to what I'm doing? And as you've said, Evan, I mean, sometimes the numbers work out and it actually makes sense to do that. Most of the time it doesn't. So you don't want to go into it blind without knowing exactly what you're doing. So if you've got cash you're throwing in, that's an easy one. We know what's happening there. If you're putting anything else in, there's likely going to be some sort of a consequence associated with that. And you'll want to do that calculation before you dive in head first. Well, maybe we should talk a bit about death, you know, since we're talking about happy topics, like when you get taxed, because I think there's a bit of a confusion around what happens to a TFSA on death, and in particular, you know, who you can give it to, how it impacts their room, all of those things. Can you speak to any of that for the listeners?
Yeah, so I'll just take the morbidity out of the conversation and just speak from like a logistics standpoint. And TFSAs for estate planning gets me really excited because it's like a miracle of estate planning.
You do look really excited. Like, you guys can't see him right now, but he kind of started glowing with excitement. Okay,
it's awesome.
Go forth, Evan.
it's a really good tool for, you know, okay, conventional wisdom, or like you look online and be like, oh, TFSAs are great for saving for your car or next vacation or whatever. It's like, yeah, maybe, but it's also great for retirement income. It's also great for estate planning. The reason for that is because the designations that you're allowed are, they allow you to roll money over to someone else also on a tax-free basis. So let's use the first example. If you have a spouse or a common-law partner, you can name them as something called a successor holder on your TFSA. this is very unique in the registered plan beneficiary world, I guess. It is unique because if you have a spouse, you can roll over your TFSA upon your passing to your spouse, and they absorb your TFSA, and they are able to keep that dollar amount tax-free inside of their own account. They don't accrue double the room on a go-forward basis, but in theory, they could have a double TFSA and keep that money invested and withdraw all of it tax-free in their own name at that point.
Yeah, so I think the key there is if you've named the successor holder and that person, for example, is a spouse, they can receive those funds on your death, and it doesn't put them into an over-contribution scenario. That's the key. It doesn't mean that on a go-forward basis they get to have this double amount of room, but it allows them to initially absorb this room and not have them in an over-contribution, which is really cool. Right. And so if you're transferring to somebody who's not a spouse, are there any different rules that apply?
Yeah, different rules a little bit. So the person, you can name them as a beneficiary of the plan. And the difference there is that a beneficiary, largely speaking, maybe you'd have a better explanation here, is I say a beneficiary gets a check. They don't get to absorb it into their own TFSA, but they do receive it tax-free outside of the estate. And so the assets inside of a TFSA, as long as there is a beneficiary or a successor holder named, they bypass probate as well, which is great. It's a very slick process going through the estate. So you can name a friend, you can name an adult child, whatever the case is there. So I assume you can actually name a minor child. That comes with a few wrinkles there, but I haven't thought about it because it's not rolling into a TFSA of their own because you have to be 18 to have one. But anyways, thinking on my feet here a little bit, but you can pretty much name whoever you want as a beneficiary of your plan. Yeah.
Very true. Well, it's almost kind of like an insurance policy, right? Where you can name anybody you want as a beneficiary. When you're naming people that are under 18 for insurance or for this sort of scenario, like a TFSA, you just run into the pickle where, well, they're under 18, they're minors, they can't hold property. So, you know, on what terms and conditions are they receiving this asset? Is there built-in trust provisions? Are you trying to roll it into some form of a trust? So it does create some additional complexities. But as a general matter of law, yeah, you could name anybody you want to be that beneficiary. And I think this is maybe a great time to kind of give that PSA here of, you know, when you're kind of doing your annual review of your investment portfolio and what you have, whether it's pensions through work, whether it's, you know, you're, you know, using an online investing vehicle, whether you have an investment advisor, I don't really care what your vehicle is, but stop to find out what you have and if there is an ability to name a beneficiary and or in the case of a TFSA, a successor holder, and have you named somebody? Because sometimes we just assume that we have, or the person that we actually have named doesn't really match anymore. I see this happen a lot when couples get married. Previously, they probably had their parents down as beneficiaries. They just sort of assumed that somehow this got switched on the date of marriage, but nobody made that request. Similarly, on the way out of a relationship, once you've divided all of your property, unless some or all of these investments are somehow looped into your property division, you probably don't want to have an ex-spouse as the beneficiary of your TFSA, I'm thinking. So it's a great time to kind of go through and do that cleanup. And if you don't remember what you've put, your advisor can always tell you, because I'm always forgetting what I've changed and what I've done. And I just phone up my advisor and she gives me this nice little summary and I feel better about myself because I know I've done it right.
Yeah, that's part of our review process with clients. For us, it's kind of old hat because we do it all the time. But I had a client specifically say last year, he said, can we talk about this every year? Because I always forget. It's like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, and once you have a spouse, perhaps that passes away, you know, it's a good time to make that yes. change over to somebody else too. Yeah.
Yes. Well, this was great. I knew it would be great. I really appreciate you coming on. Anybody listening, please check out Evan's podcast. It's really good. Evan takes the same approach that I've taken to my podcast, which is we're speaking to you in a way that we're trying to give you foundational principles so that you can go forth and empower yourself to speak to your advisors and get things done. It's very interesting to hear some of the items that he's speaking about. So he has talked about EFTs in his podcast. I saw that one come through. And he's got a great episode on how to use the My Account with CRA, which is also something I think we're all going to be looking at here in the next little bit as we get ready to file our taxes for this season. So, Evan, thank you so much. It's been fun, and I hope we get to do this again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Please note that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast episode belong solely to the speakers and are not necessarily the views of the speaker's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. In addition, the information provided and discussed in this podcast is not legal advice. We encourage you to consult with your legal advisor for specific advice.